This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
I want to read you guys a letter to the editor that we found in the Lexington Herald Leader. It was a fascinating attempt at trying to explain why some people support President Trump. Here's what he says. Why do good people support Trump? It's because people have been trained from childhood to believe in fairy tales. This set their minds up to accept things that make them feel good. The more fairy tales and lies he tells, the better they feel. Show me a person who believes in Noah's Ark, and I will show you a Trump voter. Look, this gets at something, Dean, that my executive producer likes to say is, hey, voters want to be lied to sometimes. They don't always love being told hard truths.
That's Chuck Todd reading a letter during NBC's Meet the Press. Odd, I know a lot of people who believe the story in the Bible about Noah's Ark, but aren't Trump supporters. What do the two have to do with one another? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
What does Noah's Ark have to do with Donald Trump?
Well, I think it would help to back all the way up to Richard Nixon. A long, long time ago, there was a famous book called The Selling of the President, I believe it was. The author's last name was McGinnis. And in this book, there was a very famous statement in which they said something like, let's face it, Richard Nixon is now president of wherever there is no bookstore. Now, when you hear a phrase like that, president of wherever there is no bookstore, you're dealing with really, really intense stereotypes about who people are and what they believe and how they believe. But at the same time, you could just say, oh, it's really simple. They're saying Nixon voters are stupid, and people who are against Nixon are smart. They read books. And the people who vote for Richard Nixon are dumb. They don't read books, so they don't have bookstores. So thus, he's president of wherever there is no bookstore. Now, years later, you had in 1993 a very famous Washington Post article when they were talking about evangelicals and the viewers of television preachers and the religious right, and they said, and this was not in an opinion piece, this was in an A1 news piece, and this statement was not attributed to anyone. This was stated as fact that we all know these people are, quote, largely poor, uneducated, and easy to command. All over America, evangelicals faxed in, this is pre-internet and scanners, they faxed in copies of their PhD diplomas, you know, and master's degrees and all of this other stuff. And the Washington Post repented of that, and the author of that piece later said he really meant to say that they were relatively poor, uneducated, and easy to command, which didn't make a whole lot of evangelicals really happy either. So to some degree, when you put someone like Donald Trump into the mix, someone who lives and dies by tweets, and a man who openly says, you know, I watch six TV channels at the same time, and numerous members of his staff have been quoted as saying he doesn't read the briefing papers, or if you write briefing papers, you've got to have it down to a couple of bullets. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's Donald Trump, a man who never uses a fly swatter when a baseball bat will do, that takes these stereotypes and cranks the amplifier up to 11, you know, as the rock and roll image would go. So we're dealing with really old stereotypes here. And obviously anyone who would believe in Noah's Ark, and there are a number of different ways to believe about Noah's Ark, a number of different ways of expressing that doctrine, that story, and even arguments about the, you know, the evidence for this or not. There's a lot of ways to argue about that, but I don't think this is an image that's not being used in an intelligent manner. They're basically saying people who believe stories in the Bible are going to be Trump voters. which is like a really nasty way of stating the fact that the biggest divide in American politics right now is between urban elites and heartland normal people. It's between Jesus land. You know, you've ever seen the famous map of Jesus land versus the Republic of logic and wisdom and education, or I've seen different names for it. This is just a huge stereotype in American life right now. And it's kind of, if America ever has a Brexit, religious language, religious images, and quotes of this kind will be right at the heart of that schism.
I can't really figure out who it's intended to insult more from a journalist perspective, the Trump voter or a person who believes what the Bible says.
They're saying it's the same. I mean, obviously, no one would vote for Trump unless they were this kind of stupid person. That's just at this point a given. And of course, I say that as someone who is not a Trump voter and someone who has opposed him at every single minute of his alleged public career in politics. I mean, but that's not what's assumed here. He had that great quote, show me someone who believes a fairy tale like Noah's Ark and I'll show you. Is it I'll show you a Trump voter or I'll show you someone who's likely to be a Trump voter?
I'll show you a Trump supporter.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to know what to do with that.
Why do you think Chuck Todd thought that would be useful? NBC's Meet the Press has a pretty prestigious career or reputation. Why do you think the current host thought that would be useful in a conversation explaining the support for President Trump among American voters?
Well, here in the South, the phrase we would use for that is preaching to the choir. And NBC, in this horribly divided media marketplace we have right now, where half the nation consumes one form of media that tells them what they want to hear, and the other half listen to a different form of media that tell them exactly what they want to hear, he's talking to his people. He's talking to the MSNBC, CBS, mainstream audience. And that's the image of altogether now the 81% of white evangelicals who just love Trump, right? I mean, it's all a part of that palette of simplistic colors.
Why do you think that also tells us a very important something we need to know about the attitude of journalism today, apart from Trump?
Well, let me jump back to the Issues Etc. conference. What are we now, up to almost 2 years from that time when I spoke there? And the question everybody was asking me, if you remember, was, well, what do you think we should do? What news should we consume? And I argued that they needed to find a short list of people on Twitter that they could follow who read the best arguments on both sides of these things and comment on them. And that they needed to try to find out if their local papers and local stations were still interested in covering people on both sides of divisive issues and being fair and respectful to people involved in certain debates, not attributing things like fairy tales to them. But we live right now in a media that the internet has pushed into transition between an old-fashioned form of journalism, which ironically could best be described as truly liberal, in which people try to listen to both sides, try to respect both sides, and you've heard me before call this the American model of the press, and then you have the European model of the press in which people openly advocate for specific positions and let the reader know what their biases are. We're in transition, where we have a lot of people right now who are doing advocacy journalism on both the left and the right, but they don't want to say they are. They want to say they're doing old-fashioned American journalism, when in reality, they've already started the story knowing who's right. and knowing who they're going to have wear the black hat and the white hat in this story. And it's all very confusing because the same institution, of course, I criticized the New York Times a lot on this, especially after the Bill Keller quotes that we've discussed many times where he says that we're not liberal other than or aside from coverage of moral, cultural issues. It's kind of like a limited advocacy journalism. The same paper may have brilliantly fair and accurate and balanced stories on things happening in international affairs or business, sports, or even arts or whatever, but then turn right around and on issues of religion, morality, and culture, you're just getting one side's talking points. And at the most, you're hearing one paragraph from the other side taken off a blog or a website so that they don't even have to deign to talk to these silly religious people. And they just move on. So we're in this confusing age. What we're seeing and why you get a reaction to something like this quote, what we're seeing is that people still get upset about this. When you walk up and you slap someone right between the eyes with a quote like this in a setting that's as respected as Meet the Press, and people are still capable of saying, "What the heck just happened?" And this is the sort of thing that we do at Get Religion all the time, trying to point out these things. And I think it's very significant that a lot of conservative people have written off Get Religion, have stopped paying attention to it, because they think we're naive to think that the media even cares about issues of fairness and balance anymore. And I think there are some journalists who don't care, and I think there are a lot of highly competent, skilled journalists who really still care about these issues. And that's why I still do what I do.
I noticed this shortly after President Trump was elected, and after his inauguration, the Washington Post and the New York Times both started running a lot of ads via social media. Truth dies in the darkness, those kinds of things, where it sounded like they were going to double down on the American model of journalism,
mm-hmm,
and really go for the truth wherever it may be found, whatever it happened to be. But at the same time, individual journalists for both of those institutions have kind of said publicly many times, well, you know, it's in a state of emergency because President Trump is president.
Right.
And we have to abandon this model of objectivity because Trump.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And of course, Twitter, woke Twitter, has been the place where that drama has played out. And sometimes people get on Twitter and they just can't contain themselves. And we get another one of these quotes that everybody gets to argue about and jump up and down about, in my opinion, with good cause. But like I'm saying, we're in a period of transition. Truth Dies in Darkness is a great slogan, but if you've already decided that there's only one group of people that you need to listen to in order to figure out what you believe the truth is, and you've already definitely decided who constitutes the darkness, and I think we would agree that to sane, rational people in America, the darkness is constituted by people who believe in fairy tales like Noah's Ark and stuff like that. I think that's what's being said by Chuck Todd in that interview.
Well, when Chuck Todd read that letter on Meet the Press, one of the people responding to it was none other than Dean Baquet of the New York Times, the executive editor there. And although Todd kind of threw him that softball, he demurred a little bit.
Well, he did, and he returned to a theme that he has voiced in other times in the past, which is we need to do a better job of understanding both halves of America. I think it's very significant that when he says something like, and by the way, we need to do a better job of covering religion, I think it's very significant that he gets to that by saying we live in a country right now where we have people voting for Trump, and we have the alt-right, and we have large parts of middle America who no longer believe in journalism. He'll say things like that, and then he'll say, which means, or in other words, we need to do a better job of covering religion. And this isn't new. The Chuck Todd interview where Bakay speaks up on this issue, I think it's important to remember that he's been there before. On National Public Radio, back in 2016, he made a very similar statement, and I was happy he even used the phrase, get religion.
I think that the New York-based and Washington-based, too, probably media powerhouses don't quite get religion. We have a fabulous religion writer, but she's all alone. We don't get religion. We don't get the role of religion in people's lives. And I think we can do much, much better. And I think there are things that we can be more creative about to understand the country.
That is, again, New York Times executive editor Dean Bakay speaking back in 2016 to NPR's Fresh Air's Terry Gross. What do you think there, Terry?
And he's saying something very similar now. And as someone who teaches a course on this topic, I always point people back to the New York Times self-study of 2004 and 2005, where over and over they say, we need to do a better job of covering the rest of America. We need to do a better job of covering religion. We need to do a better job, etc. And then where they run into problems is, does that mean we need a newsroom that contains a more diverse set of intellects, life experiences? And that gets us down to the kind of the beach, you know, that I've been dying on for decades now in my work, both at Christian colleges and in the mainstream press, which is intellectual and cultural diversity, and above all, a respect for the views of people on both left and right in the world of religion, and a respect for the subject of religion, and a willingness to take religion as seriously as you take politics and business and sports and law and arts. You know, if we had newsrooms that treated religion like these other subjects that they truly respect, we wouldn't consistently have the problems that we have with religion coverage, in my opinion. We wouldn't see the kinds of errors about religion that we continue to see all the time, and that, you know, you and I have discussed, you know, for years now. The actual quote in the Chuck Todd interview, besides not using get religion anymore, it's still this sense that religion is something associated with this part of the country that we don't get along with very well. And Bakay always says, I grew up in a very religious family, with an emphasis on the words grew up. And then he always talks about, let me read part of this. And I think, look, people in New York and Los Angeles is the places I've lived in, not everybody, but people in the worlds we travel don't always see religion as the powerful force that it is. I think that's a vague way of stating they do see religion as a powerful force, and they see it as part of the darkness that they're trying to defeat when it becomes associated with the true faith of most newsrooms, which is politics. Politics being the only thing that's real, and politics being the thing in which change actually comes to the world. Newsrooms believe religion is important to the degree that it's political. This is one of the things recently that the historian Thomas Kidd has been stressing in his book, Evangelical, What is an Evangelical, or Who is an Evangelical? A Faith in Crisis. He's been stressing over and over that part of the problem is that way too many political journalists, and let me single out political journalists, because obviously skilled, trained religion beat reporters, while I may disagree with them from time to time, you see a completely different level of work on these subjects when you're dealing with the religion beat. When you're dealing with political reporters, basically they're only interested in religion to the degree that it affects politics. And if that's your approach to religion, then you're not going to understand the power of religion in the lives of millions of Americans, and according to George Gallup and other polls, probably about a third of the nation, to a strong degree, attempt to live their lives day after day with religion as one of the foundation defining elements of who they are and why they do what they do. We see this affect all kinds of stories. Right now, I've been very moved by the struggles to cover the anti-Semitism that's affecting New York City right now so much. And there was a piece the other day in The Forward, a liberal Jewish publication, where somebody just in an opinion piece said, can we go ahead and admit that one of the reasons we're struggling to cover these stories is that all of this is happening to Orthodox Jews, and that a lot of liberals in America don't like Orthodox Jews? Because once again, these are the kinds of fairy tale people who believe in things like Noah's Ark and following all of the traditions of ancient Judaism, or is their version of the traditions of ancient Judaism. So this is a huge divide. Over and over, I have used the image that potentially this could turn into the American Brexit, that we just have an economic divide, a political divide, a cultural divide, a legal divide right now between two radically different kinds of Americans at this point. And I think the divide is pretty close to 50-50, in large part because the huge urban areas that are so liberal and blue, as we would put it in the blue versus red stereotyping, there's a lot of people that live in those areas. And just like in Brexit, where it seemed like it was London and one or two major areas versus the rest of Britain, what we're seeing in America is largely between coastal elites, Northern California, New York, Boston, Washington, etc., versus large parts of America in the Bible Belt and the Great Midwest and whatever else. So once again, a familiar topic that you and I have discussed many times, but here we are again listening to people reacting to the same divide.
In that 2016 interview, was Dean Baquet essentially saying, yes, we journalists are in the elite class and we don't run in the kind of circles where religion is considered significant beyond its political impact? Was he essentially admitting
that? Yeah, it seemed to be, yet at the same time, they were listening to the New York Times readers' representative, Liz Spaed, was writing that in the paper, which was creating a lot of furor inside the newsroom. And eventually she lost her position over trying to say precisely that to the newsroom. So this is where I think the equation breaks down. In the 2005 self-study, when the editor who responded to that study was Bill Keller, it was very significant that the people said, we need to do a better job. We need more diversity in the newsroom, and it implied cultural diversity, more military veterans, more people from rural areas, more religious believers of a wide variety of kinds, etc. And then in his response, Bill Keller essentially said, I totally agree, we should do a better job, but I think the people we already have can be trained to do a better job. In other words, don't tell me who to hire. We don't need cultural diversity in this newsroom. The people who are already there will do a better job. And to me, that's the flip side of the traditional and conservative religious believers that I've dealt with all my life, who just say, journalism is worthless. This is not a part of God's creation. This is not a true vocation and calling. You can't be a journalist and a Christian at the same time. And they write it off. The image that I've always used, and of course it ended up being the name of a book that some of us went together to produce, Blind Spot. I've always argued that we're dealing here with a blind spot that has two sides. and two halves of America that don't communicate with each other. And it's really the two parts, two halves of the First Amendment don't respect each other. And it's just as much a problem that there are religious believers, conservative religious believers in many cases, who don't respect the constitutionally protected role that journalism plays in our society. That's as much a part of the equation as the journalists who don't respect the constitutionally protected role that religion plays in our culture and in our land. Now, a lot of these journalists, like Chuck Todd and Dean Baggett, and what they would say is, no, we think that religion is a good thing. We know a lot of religion that's good. And the sense you get from the paper is that there's good religion and there's bad religion. And it's the New York Times and its editors who get to tell you which is which. Which religion is a part of the darkness? Which religion is part of the light? Which religion is good? Which religion is bad? And which religion is fairy tales? And which religion is rational and thus on the side of how we view history?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to do it.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.